Good afternoon, good evening, and good night, as Truman would say. Welcome back to the Sunday Scotch Society. My name is K. Quincy Parker, and today I am, flying solo in the host chair. My partner in crime is absent, with leave. I did indeed consent to his abscondment to one of the family of islands, and that's okay. What it means is that the incredible bottle of scotch that I brought for us to sample today is, I'm going to have to hold it and make sure that enough of this survives for next week so that he can try it, because I'm incredibly excited to hear what his reaction to this this particular scotch will be. So you guys know me as someone who enjoys, you know, a good single malt scotch, and I can wax rhapsodic about them from time to time. And today, one of my favorite scotches of all time is what we are going to be sampling. It is the Glenrothes 12-year-old. It is a Speyside single malt, and if you're familiar with the Scotch regions, Speyside is in the lowlands, kind of by the water, and it has, we'll taste it and we'll smell it after we open it, so we could talk about that with our guest on the air. But I just want to say that I'm really excited about this bottle of scotch today, and I look forward to hearing what our guest has to say. Speaking of which, our guest is the inimitable Shanna Edgecombe. Shanna is a business guru, sort of coach-ish type person, a business developer, and I expect that she will be able to bring us some incredible insight as we have this conversation about what to look forward to in terms of trends in 2024. Not fashion trends, because that's not this show, but maybe technology trends, maybe business trends, maybe lifestyle trends, that sort of thing. So, Shanna, welcome back to the Sunday Scotch Society.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. And now we will do the ritual, which yes. is the opening and the pouring of the first and I will allow you to do the honors of telling us what you are smelling.
I feel like it's burning my nose hair slightly.
It is a single malt scotch.
Almost like if I had smoked my chest.
Okay.
A little bit of evaporation. Now, I don't know much about malt scotch.
Mm-hmm.
Still burning, as I smell. I can't think of any one note. It's like a little bit fruity, but not very, very light fruit compared to.
Yeah. When I take a nose, take my nose and shove it into the glass, the thing about this that I smell is there's vanilla, there's a little marmalade, there's a little there's a lot of sort of spice notes as well.
Very on the spicy. Back.
But there's also the absence of the peat that, you know, is the peat is what makes some scotches taste medicinal for some people.
Mm.
It's the dirt, the, you know, the dirtiness, mm-hmm. right? But this is just straight up flavor. I'm just excited to taste it. So it is unfortunate that you are a teetotaler. But if I play my cards right, maybe I could get the other person in the room who does indulge to come and indulge with me and give us their thoughts on this single malt scotch while we have this conversation. So, oh.
Clearly you're a fan.
Oh. Oh, this is so good. Okay. So, but, see, I want to talk about the trends, but but I have to talk about the scotch first.
Have a moment. Enjoy yourself.
Okay. So, on the tongue, good scotch generally has some complexities. It plays around with, you know, where you're really tasting it. And what I am tasting from this one is... The first thing is the sort of baking spices that are coating the back of the middle, and now it's kind of moved to the front of the tongue where the candy and vanilla kind of come out, and the marmalade, and then as it's finishing, you know, you get the spice at the back of the throat, and it just... You know, oh, yeah. Oh, and of course, it is, you know, as a single malt scotch, it is quite quite a stiff drink. So it's not the kind of thing that you shoot.
Okay.
Somebody asked me the other day for a shot of scotch, and I almost threw the bottle at them. No, I'm not a scotch snob. But you don't shoot single malt scotch.
Okay, understood. Well, now that you say that, I could smell it was like a spicy vanilla extract, which you use for baking, since you said that.
Yeah. Oh, cool. I'm
moment done?
I mean, something is done. So, 2024. It is just started.
Yeah.
And there are interesting things happening in it already. One of those interesting things is the sort of the way that business the way that business and technology gurus are taking the opportunity to get out there first and say, we think this is going to be the biggest trend of the year. We think whatever, right? And one of the things that I thought was interesting was to take a look at some of those trends and consider how they might relate to what we are doing here in the 240, right?
If at all, right? Yeah,
because that's the thing, isn't it? We are a fully integrated member of the international community.
Mm-hmm.
For all that the Bahamas passport gives you access visa free to 197 countries around the world. For all that Bahamians go off to college, out into the world, all over the world. You could find Bahamians practically in all 197 of those countries. it still feels like our innovation atmosphere is a little insular. Mm-hmm. It still feels like we aren't really taking advantage of the fact that it is such a smaller world now because of all of the different technologies that we could leverage.
Yeah.
So, obviously, I won't say the number one trend, mm-hmm. but one of the biggest, one of the ones that everybody is identifying as crucially important is generative AI, mm-hmm. right? Machine learning that can then turn around and generate content. Mm-hmm. And employing it for whatever mm-hmm. whatever ends you see as a useful thing.
Yeah.
For a creative, you know, it's a thing, right? Because the generative AI is now composing music. It is painting yeah. art, yeah. you know, and creating artworks mm-hmm. and graphic artworks and, mm-hmm. and fine art as well. So, you know, it's not simply you type something into ChatGPT mm-hmm. and it spits out a nice business plan, or mm-hmm. you know, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what are you thinking about generative AI as a trend, number one, mm-hmm. and about how it relates to the Bahamas, us mm-hmm. as young Bahamians, us as older Bahamians, us as Bahamians with businesses, mm-hmm. us as consumers?
I would say, I think generative AI has its place. I think it's a good thing. I'm also a creative. I am very aware that someone can type into any number of AI tools mm-hmm. and create what someone might argue I could write myself. But those AI tools would be cheaper than hiring me. Let's go straight at that.
It's a problem.
It is a problem. But I think it also pushes us. I think it can push us to differentiate ourselves. It can push us to say, well, you know what? Here's the difference between what the computer can generate and what I can do. Because the computer cannot necessarily create the nuance. What you can find is 10 of us can put in something similar mm-hmm. into the AI tool, and we will get slight variations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Less personality than the flavor that a human being can put on it, who understands your tone, your brand voice, who understands what it is that you're trying to do and how to get that to translate. I think that AI is almost like a new type of competition, in my opinion.
Okay.
Now, for people like me and us, it can also help us work faster. Let's be honest. Because I can type in and say, this is the project that I'm working on, and this is the outline of it. I want you to tell me if this makes sense. Critique this for me. Go over the spelling and grammar for me. Is this structurally sound? Now, I will say this. I am in a Facebook group with these ladies, amazing ladies from all around the world, who took this particular course or have taken courses from this university. All of us have done it. And this lady said that she actually lost a TEDx speaking position. She'd already been awarded. They said, yes, we are going to allow you to be a speaker. But then on her social media one day, she wrote something along the lines of being grateful for the opportunity and mentioning that she used, I believe it was ChatGPT, to write the foundation or the outline for her presentation. And do you know what happened?
No.
The opportunity was rescinded.
Because
she used ChatGPT. Now, they would not have known that had she not said or alluded to that on her social media. And she argued that point. And she argued the point that ChatGPT did not prepare her full presentation. She used it as the starting outline. But she lost that opportunity. And for those of you who know TED Talks, that's a huge opportunity. Mm-hmm. It can be life-changing for someone's career. And so I think we're going to see more of that, or even just people being more secretive of the tools that they're using. There's a fine line between, you know, we heard about the stories of large corporations not allowing their employees to use ChatGPT for various reasons.
It just seems a little...
In part, I understand why. I do.
Okay, you say so.
I have to say in part because essentially whatever you put in there can potentially be displayed as information for someone else's output.
Fair enough.
So if you are sharing trade secrets or whatever it is and asking it to do some things, then you have potentially exposed the inner workings and the proprietary information of that business. So in that sense, I understand. But to think that your employees are not using it at all, no, they sneak in. That's what they're doing. They're going to sneak. Mm-hmm. Now, how does it work for us in the Bahamas? We're so far behind. And I say that not being critical. We're so far behind because I think there's a high percentage of the population that either does not use AI or has barely heard of it. And I think that puts us behind the eight ball, not just with generative AI, but in other things that are happening around the world. And we are slow to respond, slow to react, generally.
Mm-hmm. This isn't a business show, so I don't want to turn it into one. Mm-hmm. Especially not when this beautiful Glen Ross is 12-year-old Scotch is sitting here, you know.
And my Lipton black tea. Come on now.
This is not the tea society. This is the Scotch society. You know, smell it now. It's opening up to a different sort of a licorice-y kind of, you know.
It burns more now.
Of course. It's open. But it's also smoother to drink now. See that? What?
So it burns less? That's what you're saying? He's having another moment. I wish you could see it.
Oh, it is so good. It is so good. All right. But there has to be business applications to things like generative AI for Bahamian businesses. Mm-hmm. We'll come back to that.
Okay.
Another sort of trend, a sexy trend that people are talking about is, this one is a little out there, but I think it has tremendous potential for the Bahamas, and that's genomics.
Genomics?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a pivotal field for personalized medicine and for advancing our understanding of genetics in agriculture, bioengineering, and disease prevention. And as gene sequencing becomes faster and more affordable, the experts are looking for a surge in genomic data that will require sophisticated AI tools to analyze. And that way, we're looking at the creation of things like ethical debates surrounding genetic privacy and modification. But we're talking about gene sequencing and using genetics to create almost custom engineered medicine for a society or a population like the Bahamas. I mean, to me, that is, I just think that's really sexy. I think it's terrifying that you could do that, but I also think that that is where we are headed. That's where the world is headed. I mean, it sounds like science fiction, but it isn't science fiction. It's reality. It's what's happening in the world. So, yeah. All right, so I'll leave that one alone because you seem a little...
No, my only thought on that, well, I have two thoughts. One, it would be amazing if science could address our large BRCA1 gene population that leads to breast cancer, because we have disproportionate numbers.
This is exactly what I'm thinking about.
Now, two, that's also terrifying because there are some people who are quite ethical and they have a job to do and they're passionate about it and they want to do good. And then there are others who would use that to potentially do nefarious things. And sometimes you can't tell who is who. One. And I think that's important to note. Do I want my genetics just out there for access? Not necessarily. But it's also how it's presented to the people, as was presented with COVID. But that's a different.
Although, is it really a different?
Good question.
I mean, you know, let's come back to that. Datification, the everything becoming data, and that data then becoming the fuel for decision making. And the importance of data analytics and how to interpret data. And with these sorts of things, you know, you got smart devices and the Internet of Things that create more and more and more data and more and more points of data. In a country like the Bahamas, we have our Department of Statistics, the National Department of Statistics, has morphed into the Bureau of Statistics and stamp and whatever, right? And these are statisticians who have a national mandate, but we also see in a sort of growing data economy, you know, people like Joey and Wally at open what is it, public domain, and and then open source, open something, whatever it is. And then, you know, Tyrina, you know, does some public polling as well for, with Fusion IMC. And so it's like there is a recognition of the importance of data, but...
Not culturally. I don't know that we value data. I think the government probably has a lot of raw data, and that's how it remains. It remains raw. There are statistics that we need that is probably not being collected. And data is one of those things that the conversation is a little bit sensitive for me because I get frustrated. I get frustrated because how are we as a country planning our future? And we don't have trends. We don't have trending information. We don't have a comparison of the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, the 2010s, the 2020s to see what's happening. So we almost have to pull different information from different places. And sometimes it ends up being anecdotal when what we really need is data to support policy. We need policy. We need certain policies to be put in place. But the reality is if we can't bring raw data to say this is a problem or this needs to be addressed, there is not a strong argument, in my opinion.
But that's kind of the thing, isn't it? Is that with it's almost the catch-22. Without the data to make the argument, you don't really get the successful argument to get the data.
Right.
So you're almost caught in a Gordian knot that you can't untangle and get out to the other side. So those are some sort of foundational trend-like thoughts that I had that I thought would be kind of fun to frame the conversation. But I'm curious about what you think is out there that is going to be big in the Bahamas this year.
Obviously. Uh-oh. Obviously, you know, we know it's not even the beginning of February yet. And one of the hot topics people are talking about that's most relevant is crime. How do we address it? What's going to be done? What can we do to mitigate this? How do we address the shortfalls of the system? There are so many questions. And I wouldn't necessarily say that's a trend, but something has to change. And to your point about data, and it's almost like the chicken or the egg, right? But we're always looking at other countries. We're always going on trips. We bring in consultants. There is no dearth of feedback. There is no dearth of ideas. There's no dearth of recommendations about what should be done. Much of it from the outside. Do we realize how much money we pay consultants every year to do these reports for us, to research? But what happens after that, besides the document going onto someone's email or hard drive or circulated and then it dies a slow death? And again, that's not to point fingers at anyone or be critical. Well, it is to be critical, but to point fingers at anyone. But things can be done because we can see what works elsewhere. The question just is, do we have the will to adapt it for ourselves? That's a big thing. I want to say a trend is in the Bahamas, small business owners, we need to figure out how to use AI to our advantage. Now, I know some people for AI, it is scary. It may be questionable, but let's go back to early AI, which we didn't think of it as being AI. But when we used Microsoft Word and spelling and grammar and the detection of something that's misspelled or misused, that's technically AI. That was the lower level, Clippy. As I would call it. Right. So now it has graduated. This is all we're seeing. AI has been developing. It's been morphing. But now it's gotten to a place where a lot of us, we question it because we either feel like it doesn't make us relevant anymore, or there's a larger conversation globally of how do you ethically control AI? The reality is, can you control AI?
I was about to say, I don't know if that's really the question. The real question to me is, it's already a thing.
It's already a thing.
Can you control it? Or do you regulate it? Do you provide some boundaries and say, within these boundaries, have fun?
I do not know that you can regulate AI. It's almost like trying to regulate cryptocurrency. It exists out in the world and it has access to, so many people have access to it, right? So that would require so many countries to come together legally to agree. The what do they call it? The horses out of the barn? Because we're at the point now where someone can take a however many seconds of a clip of you or I and then have it recreated to have us saying something else on camera. And it looks almost perfect, except that AI cannot get the eyes right. So the eyes always look a bit dead or almost like it's just not a spirit behind the eyes. But other than that, you can't say that that wasn't you or I saying those things. And that's scary. That's part of it. That's scary. And of course it is. You know, we saw the movies that threatened that the machines would take over. And we're building the machines to take over.
Sure. Shanna, you sound as though you are alarmed and worried that we are about to create Skynet, or that we may have already created Skynet and not be aware.
Explain what Skynet is. I'm sorry, y'all. I don't get a lot of references. What is Skynet?
Skynet is the intelligence that created the Terminator and sent him back in time.
Okay.
To and so it was the computer program that gained sentience and decided that humankind needed to end in the Terminator movies.
I think an alarm needs to be sounded just for us to be aware. Even down to the cybersecurity. We don't take that seriously. There's very little someone probably has to do. I'm not encouraging, this is a disclaimer, I'm not encouraging anyone to do this. But there's probably very little that needs to be done to gain control of government data, of government systems, or even the big systems here in general.
It's already happened.
It has happened.
It has been kept quiet, but it's already happened.
It has happened. So, I mean, it's here. It's here. The horse is out of the barn. We just need to be aware that there is a horse and there is a barn. More of us.
All right. So, I'm going to pull us back from the ledge of alarm and bring us back to trends.
Trends, yes.
Yes. Like, for instance, the elusive, inimitable, wonderfully exciting and much touted 5G. The rest of the world is blazing along at 5G, and 5G and the Internet of Things are working together to create this whole new, I mean, in some places they're even already talking about 6G. I mean, come on, right?
Wow.
We still, so...
Don't,
yeah. Yeah, so we're going to skip over, like, 5G, but I want you, I'm trying to put your mind in thought, in that sort of a frame, right? So some things have to have happened over the last few years that give you a sense of big developments that are going to happen this year, right? In my view, anyway, so...
Yeah, I would say another thing is crypto. Crypto is a hot topic, a controversial topic, based on the things that happened about a year ago, a little over a year ago. It put a spotlight on us. It made some Bahamians fearful of crypto. It may have already been a big question mark, and it made it almost seem out of the question. But I'm glad that we have people here who are advocating for cryptocurrency, who are advocating for blockchain. Can I say that I understand all of it? No. I understand enough of the fundamentals to know that I should not be left behind as things are going. The reality is the people who bought Bitcoin 20 years ago cashed in. But they had to be patient. They had to have some foresight. They had to have even the, you know what, I know if this can work, but I'll try it. Let me see. And then they cashed out big. I actually know one of those people. And so it's, I would say, learn about crypto. You can go on YouTube. You can pay someone to explain it to you. Learn about blockchain. This is the way that the world is going. And I would hate for us to get completely left behind. And yes, I know that our government has positioned itself as far as having the first CBDC. And we are positioned globally, or positioning ourselves globally, as being very innovative and tech forward and all of that, until you lift the curtain back and you see all the things that got swept behind it, and notice that things aren't things as we would like them to appear to be. That's what I'll say about that.
I mean, you like to waltz right up to the edge of saying something and then like turn left.
Another trend I'd like to see, honestly, is more e-commerce options for business owners. Because again, we like to position ourselves as being international. But the reality is, how is someone going to pay us if we want to do international business, if we want to get international sales? And don't tell me the local financial institutions, because they don't give a fart about us, right? Yeah. We can just look at the interest rates. We can look at how long it takes to open a bank account and the ease of doing certain things. We need more e-commerce options. Yes, there's Canoe and there's Island Pay and a few different options, Sun Cash. But how do I get paid from someone in Norway to get money to me without them thinking, you know, I don't want to do that wire transfer because there's so much extra fees that I have to pay. And that can immediately hurt us in being competitive. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, if they had to worry about how to pay us, why in the world would they engage in the first place?
That's all I'm saying. And then what hurts us too is we end up getting put in this position of, I'll pay you when I reach, if they are commissioning us for something that they will use once they get here. That puts us in a precarious position. You know, we can get shafted. We can lose money. No, I want my deposit before you reach. I need my full payment before you reach. But we need more e-commerce options. And I'm excited to see what can emerge out of that this year and beyond.
Is the Bahamas capable of innovation?
Oh, interesting. Are we capable of innovation? I don't think we are short on ideas. I think we may be short on execution, in part because I think some other countries have an advantage of having seen someone else do it who is from their country or with their background. Has shown that that model can work. We are in a place where even some of the institutions that are supposed to fund those projects and those businesses don't necessarily quite understand the extent of technology and innovation. And so where do you go from there if you have to bootstrap something that costs $100,000 to develop? Because apps cost a lot of money to build, to host, to set up. Like I said, there's no shortage of innovation or ideas. It's the execution. It's the money part of it.
Is it though? Because I've seen, like, for instance, I've seen at Crypto Isle an investor trying to give away money, mm-hmm, for innovative business ideas. I've, mm-hmm, seen it in private conversations. I've seen it all over the place in certain kinds of environments where, yeah, there's money looking to be employed, mm-hmm, in an innovative fashion. Because people are on the lookout for the next big thing, and the next big thing might start in your living room, whatever it might be, mm-hmm, right? So how can both things be true? How can there be money looking for innovation, uh-huh, and innovation also happen to looking for money in the same community?
I think the problem is all of us aren't the 1%, all of us aren't the 5%. There's probably the majority of us who do not have innovative ideas for any vast number of reasons, right? But what happens is, how do you match the 5% or the 10% to the people who are looking to fund the innovative ideas? That is a better question. That's a deeper question. You can't assume that if you shout something once or twice that the right people will hear it who are walking by. There has to be a bit more of a targeted focus. And then you have to remember too, like I said before, there are people who have the ideas, but they haven't necessarily seen it executed here or have questions about whether or not it's possible. That's another thing. I do feel like innovation can live here. I do feel like there are innovative pockets, but I do feel like the majority of us, we're not innovative in the sense of potentially creating something that has a huge impact on the world. No. Now, why? We could get a little bit into that. Part of it being that some of us don't travel enough. We don't put ourselves in positions to be exposed. We stay within the myopic world of hair and of the close American states. But the further afield that you go and you look around, I think the more that your mind can be opened. I remember when I was in China in 2014, and you check into your hotel, you get to the hotel, you open the room door with your key, and in order for you to turn on the electricity and the air conditioning, you have to put your key card into a slot near the door. And so obviously, when you leave, you take your key card with you. So immediately, the AC cuts off, the electricity cuts off. That was their way of controlling energy cost. Can we imagine if a Bahamar or an Atlantis does that? That would be huge. That would help them tremendously. Now, obviously, there's a cost outlay because they would have to change wiring and all of that. But it can be done. It has not been done yet. That was 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. So there's so much that happens. I saw my first chip card in the Netherlands in 2007. I'm not going to name the bank, but there's a bank that's just now forcing their customers to change into chip cards. I said 2007.
Yes.
It's now 2024. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying that even the big boys can be slow to adopt.
I'll bet you any chunk of money that the banks that you're talking about,
yes,
only the branches in the Bahamas don't have chip cards. I will bet you any chunk of money that is the case. Because I think one of the unspoken rules and realities of the Bahamas is that at a certain level, we are enemies of innovation. We like the status quo, and we like the status quo enough to fight to keep it.
Yeah.
Why that might be, somebody else could say, with more authority than me.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't ask you to jump into that particular pot of boiling water. But it's true that I don't think anyone can really argue that is the case. Mm-hmm. So it comes back down, I guess, to asking the next question, if we're not really identifying how the Bahamas is able to take advantage of the trends that are out there in the technology, what can we do? And this, I guess this goes back to where you started with crime, right? But what is it that we can do for us, ignoring the rest of the world, that will create something new and some generating of new ideas and new processes that that lead to some kind of a change in the way that things either are done or the way that things are perceived in the country.
Yeah, one of the things I would say is start with the babies. Start with the children. They don't know a world without technology. They don't know a world that's manual. We are older and we're stuck in certain ways. Some of us will adopt, but for much of us, we're stuck in certain ways. People make fun of and speak kind of poorly sometimes about Generation Z, but they call us out on things. They are asking, why do we do things this way? No, we're not. That's not acceptable. Now, there are some drawbacks of that. But when you start with the children and you expose them to coding, to financial management, money management, you teach them the things at a young age that we learned through mistakes in adulthood. You teach them what's happening in the world. You teach them about crypto, about Bitcoin. Then to them, not only does it become second nature, but now they can start thinking innovatively from their young. And I think that's important because that can really transform our society. And I think they have exposure to social media. TikTok is powerful. I don't really use it that much. I'm trying to be better about that, but TikTok is powerful. So now what the teenagers and the younger generation does below teenage is they go on TikTok before they go on any other source. TikTok is their version of the news. Mm-hmm. TikTok is their version of getting current updates. And so they are exposed to things that are happening elsewhere. I have a friend. She wants to take her kids. Her and her husband want to take her kids to France, to Europe. And the teenager said, I don't need to go. I've already seen the Eiffel Tower and those things on TikTok. Powerful, right? Because for those of us who are older, we're like, when we going? How long? But for him, he's almost overexposed to certain things. It's nothing to him now. So I think it's really important to empower them and expose them.
But you also raise a vital and fascinating sort of a subcategory of the conversation. Mr. I've seen the Eiffel Tower, some regression therapy or some kind of something need to happen there, because that child has had his curiosity about the world completely denuded. It's been neutered. He's been spayed as an intellectual being by TikTok, right? And it's not his fault. It's not that he has done something that he should not have done. It is that we have not provided enough of a stimulus outside of his telephone to explain to him why it is that actually going to Paris and actually putting your own physical eyes on the Eiffel Tower is important. And that's our failure, but it is, in my view, diminishing his life, right? So he's paying a price for the failure that we have in creating, as I say, a reason for him to get out of TikTok. You know how it is. We grew up in a very different world. I grew up differently than you did. My mother and father, God bless their hearts, my mom still tells stories to this day about realizing that they hadn't seen me for a little while when I went away on trips with a choir or vacations with friends or whatever the case may be, right? But that was possible because they were used to us being outside. Mm-hmm. They were used to us being out in our neighborhood or mm-hmm. out in our communities with our friends mm-hmm. doing things outside the house. Mm-hmm. My daughter and her circle of people, they play together mm-hmm. in their phones. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? So even if they're like actually physically in the same space.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Rather than talking.
Yes.
The room will be silent.
Yeah.
Except for every now and again somebody will giggle.
Yeah.
Because whatever is happening in the phone mm-hmm. is more real to them
yeah.
than what's happening outside. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, she's grown out of that. She's 19 now, mm-hmm. right? But it's like, that's where they are, man. They're not going to be surprised that you want to take them to Paris. Mm-hmm. Unless you create, and this is no criticism to the parents yeah. in that story, right? But unless you create a reason mm-hmm. for him to be excited about going to Paris.
Yeah.
He has no reason to be excited about going to Paris because mm-hmm. he could pick up his phone and just look.
Well, for them, there is no distinction between the real world and what's in their phone or what's in the gaming system.
Mm-hmm.
Because I am a millennial, and so I got the first iteration of video games and then the first iteration of the internet.
For the record, you did not get the first iteration.
Sorry. I got like the second or third wave.
Yes.
Okay. Then it was the internet.
Atari and Commodore 64.
I thought about Atari as I said that. Mm-hmm. Then it turned into, okay, there's a huge computer that most people can't afford. Then more and more households get desktop computers. Then it's the dial-up internet and so on and so forth. I think I joined Facebook within the first or second year that it started, right? So I say all that to say that we still remember a world where you played outside. You had things that happened separate and apart from what's happening on a screen. They do not. So for them, I agree that there's a level of wonder that and curiosity that has been diminished. But at the same time, I think they can ask vital questions about why we still do things the way that we do. And why don't we do things a different way, or we can do it better? Here's an alternative. And I think there's value in that, because otherwise we'll be stuck.
There is value in it, yes, absolutely. But that, to me, the value is tempered by the... Let's take music.
Yeah.
In the 1500s, Johann Sebastian Bach mm-hmm. sort of created an oeuvre of music that more or less codified the Western fundamental functional harmony, is what it's called. The music system that we use okay. that has chords and a melody mm-hmm. and harmony and whatever mm-hmm. else, right? And so the 1500s. Mm-hmm. Every scale and every mode was already codified mm-hmm. in the 1500s. Mm-hmm. In 2024, mm-hmm. you can pick up an instrument mm-hmm. and using the same music system that Johann Sebastian Bach codified in the 1500s mm-hmm. learn to create music mm-hmm. create a piece of music, perform that music mm-hmm. and have whatever emotional impact you are able to infuse into mm-hmm. your music, whatever the case may be mm-hmm. right? In the early 20th century was a composer by the name of John Cage. And John Cage had a piece called 4 minutes and 22 seconds. The piece consisted of John Cage going up to a piano on a stage, opening up the piano, sitting there for 4 minutes and 22 seconds in absolute silence. Mm-hmm. The quote-unquote music was whatever sounds were around in the room, mm-hmm. and the audience shuffling and trying to figure out. That was the quote-unquote music, mm-hmm. right, of the piece. Mm-hmm. So in order to get away from a codified system that had been proven to work for more than 700 years, 20th century composers abandoned the very idea of actually making music. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just so that they could do something new. Mm-hmm. Just so that they could do something different. Mm-hmm. And they insisted that we call it music as well. Mm-hmm. But now, in the post-modern era, right, after neoclassicism and all of this stuff, when you listen to music, if you go to an orchestral concert, right, you go to a concert at Carnegie Hall, mm-hmm. it's the New York Philharmonic, mm-hmm. I guarantee you they are playing Beethoven, mm-hmm. and they are not playing John Cage. Mm-hmm. Because the music that was created using mm-hmm. the codified system mm-hmm. is objectively superior mm-hmm. to what is used when you are trying to create something just to do something different, yeah. or just to do something new. Mm-hmm. So I welcome Gen Z's inquisitiveness and their willingness to do things a different way. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I worry that they, as a group, are too willing to throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak.
I feel like every generation before ours said the same thing about the next one.
I mean, that's part of what generational change yeah. is.
Right.
But you are sitting here telling me that I should welcome them and their questioning of everything.
No, I'm not saying they're always yeah, right
that
or...
That is what you said.
No. I don't think that everything has a place, but I think that there is always room for a new perspective.
Absolutely.
Because this is how the Gen X felt about the millennials, and the baby boomers felt about the Gen X, and this is how we feel about the Gen Z, and I don't even know, I think it's Generation Alpha. That is below them.
That is what they call themselves, yes.
And I think there's always a level of handing the baton over.
Yeah, but that's not what you're talking about. You are now changing the nature of your own argument, right? Because the point was mm-hmm. that Gen Z, there's an intrinsic value mm-hmm. in the fact that they grew up differently than we did mm-hmm. and present a different perspective mm-hmm. and question why we do things the way we do. The criticism mm-hmm. in that is the implication that we don't question why we do things the way we do ourselves. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, of course we do.
What we do question,
that's an entirely different story.
Mm. Okay.
That's an entirely different story. Mm-hmm. And I see somebody laughing over there. And I'm going to leave that person to laugh because we are plumb out of time. And I want to take this last sip of the magnificent Glen Ross's 12-year-old smell one more time.
Less spicy, much less spicy.
Mm-hmm. Because all of that
vanilla.
Is... Yeah, you smell the vanilla now, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So the sweetness is opened up mm-hmm. as it sits, you know? Mm-hmm. And, oh, yes. It's so smooth and so round and so full. without being like aggressive. Mm. You know, some scotches, even the more refined ones, it can be a tad aggressive. Especially because, you know, it's an 80 proof whiskey or whatever the case may be, right? But this is potent and powerful without being obnoxious. I can't wait for Matthew to taste this. I think he'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
Shanna Edgecombe, you are a delightful conversation, and I thank you for your time here on the Sunday Scotch Society.
Thank you for having me.
It was your second time.
Yes.
The third time is the charm, but that suggests that this was not also charming. So, yeah, that didn't make any sense at all. All right. Thank you very much, Deb.
Thank you.
All righty, folks. That's Darovia. We'll see you next week.